Let's dive into another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by opening our Bibles back to 1 Kings chapter number 2. We'll pick up the story at verse number 13. King David has passed from the scene. His son, Solomon, now sits upon the throne. He's in his later teens. He has served as king under King David for the past few years, basically 3.5, I think, maybe 4. Once his father died, Solomon is now looking at establishing his kingdom as the clear dynasty continuation. And he has a little bit of a problem. He has an older brother, Adonijah, who had attempted to become the next king of Israel several years earlier. In fact, the very day that Solomon ended up being put on the throne by King David. And even though Solomon forgave him specifically for trying to take the kingdom that day, Adonijah still believes it should belong to him. Now, Solomon had warned him that as long as you behave yourself, you get to live. But the alternate of that was, if you try anything again, if you try to take over the kingdom in any way, shape, or form, you will be dealt with according to your treasonous behavior and attitude. So this is where we find out how that comes to the surface. And it's not just him. There seems to be others tied in with Adonijah here. Chapter 2, 1 Kings, verse 13. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. So he comes to Solomon's mom, the queen mother, if you will, who is helping guide her son, no doubt, on the throne. And Adonijah has a request. Now, she said to him, "Do you come peacefully?" And that seems a reasonable question because you might remember that Bathsheba was a little concerned that if Adonijah had come to power, she would have been killed along with all of her kids. So, "Do you come peacefully?" And he said, "Peacefully. So I'm not here to cause any trouble for you." Then he said, "I have something to say to you." So she said, "Speak." And he said, now listen to these words. This is kind of where we broke off last time. "You know that the kingdom was mine and that all Israel fully expected me to reign." So he still believes and has no problem expressing it, apparently, that I should be the king. And that's what a lot of people wanted, for me to be king. However, the kingdom's turned about and become my brother's, for it was his from he who is. Now, I'd like to hear his tone of voice when he said that, because my guess is that he said it inside air quotes. As in, "However, the kingdom has turned around and it's become my brother's because it was his from the Lord. It was his from he who is." Because, of course, that's the way that David presented it. That David had said, God is the one that decided that Solomon is going to be the next king. So my sense is that Adonijah is not acknowledging that Solomon was God's choice, but only that that is what was used to push it over the top with the people. Regardless, verse 16. Now, I have one request to make of you. Don't refuse me. So let's talk about something specific, different. And I want you to tell me you'll go along with me on this. You'll back me on this. And so she said, speak. And he said, please ask King Solomon. He will not refuse you. So that's the reason why he's talking to Bathsheba here, because he wants to put mom pressure on the young king. My guess is, again, that Solomon was made king by David when he was in his mid-teens, 14 or so, 15 maybe. Then 4 years later, after Solomon's dad passes away, that would put Solomon at the very top of his teens, you know, 19. Maybe he's ready at that break point of 20. But he is still a young man. And so Adonijah, in his, I think, probably upper 30s by now, is putting pressure on mom to put pressure on her son. So you ask King Solomon, he won't refuse you, to give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as my wife. So he presents it as just a matter of, I would like to marry Abishag, the woman, the virgin, because she and David never had any type of sexual relationships. He was only married to Abishag to make it legal for this intimate contact that they had, because she acted as his nurse. She warmed his bed for him because he wasn't able to maintain body heat. So she is a virgin widow of King David. And so Adonijah is just presenting this as, I'd like to marry her. I'd like to marry that young woman. And Bathsheba said, well, very well, I'll speak for you to the king. Now, I am puzzled and freely acknowledge it as to why Bathsheba did not see the danger, the underlying political motivations within this request, because her son Solomon immediately sees it. Maybe she just was expecting something different, and when this popped out, and maybe the way that Adonijah presented it, she just thought it was a matter of the heart. And so she thought, well, why not? Okay, because obviously my son Solomon's not going to get married to Abishag. So she agrees. Verse 19. So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah. The king rose to meet her, bowed down to her. Now that is interesting culturally, because by all rights, he is the top person in the kingdom now. And so she should bow to him. But he is still showing great respect to her as mom. And so he sat on his throne, had a seat brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. So there's not normally a seat there, apparently, but he makes arrangements for it. And so they're sitting together in the throne room. She said, I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you. So you can feel that there's good relationship between the two of them. And she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife. Straightforward. But listen to the response. Verse 22, King Solomon answered his mother, and why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother. And on his side are Abiathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah. So he immediately identifies this as another attempt at a coup for Adonijah to present himself as the rightful king who has the right to the virgin widow of the last king. That it was an understanding in the culture of the lower Middle East at this time that a new king took over all of the contracts and the obligations of the previous king, and many of those were sealed through marriage deals. And so for him, Adonijah, to get married to Abishag, the widow, the virgin widow of the late king, would be pretty much I am the man with the right to fill the shoes and the bed and the contractual obligations of the late king. And you can tell through the other things that he said that he felt that there were others involved in this new version of the same coup. He knows that Adonijah is the eldest surviving son, that there are people that think that that is the proper right for the eldest son to sit upon the throne. But Abiathar is still one of the priests supporting Adonijah. He was in the attempted coup and was given a pass because he apologized. Same thing with Joab. So Solomon says there's still major leaders in the religious side and the military side supporting him. I know that. And so he believes this is a coup. So King Solomon swore by he who is, saying, God do so to me and more also, if this word does not cost Adonijah his life, which is exactly what he warned several years earlier. If you try anything beyond what just happened to take over the kingdom, you will be executed as a traitor, as a seditionist. So, in Solomon's view, that's what's happening. Now, therefore, as he who is lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, who's made me a house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. And so King Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down and he died. So he was executed by the head of Solomon's military. Then Abiathar is called in. To Abiathar, the priest, the king said, you go to Anatot, to your estate. Anatot was a town to the north of Jerusalem. It was a priestly town. It is the town where Abiathar apparently was born and raised. So he's basically dismissing him from being part of the religious service. But I will not at this time put you to death because you carried the ark of he who is God before David my father and because you shared in all my father's affliction. So he gives Abiathar not a pass, not amnesty, but the rest of his life in retirement in his own town, not doing anything else. And the only reason he does it is because of past history that he had with his dad. So Solomon expelled Abiathar from being priest to he who is, thus fulfilling the word of he who is that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. So Abiathar is a descendant of Eli. And one of the curses put on that family because of their sinfulness was that none of them would either grow old or stay in office until their death. And so that is what the prophet writer of this section lets us know. Now, my suspicion, can't prove it, but I'm going to offer it, is that Abiathar is not simply being retired, but he is also being confined. That he is being told, you must go to Anathoth and never leave there again. Stay in that town. Don't ever come to Jerusalem. Verse 28. When the news came to Joab, remember the longtime commander of the military forces who was involved in the attempted Adonijah coup, he is apparently identified by Solomon as being involved in this attempt by Adonijah to take over again. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom. Yeah, that's true. Instead, he murdered him. Joab fled to the tent of He Who Is and caught hold of the horns of the altar. We saw this once before. There is something about going to the tabernacle at Gibeon, going to that great big bronze altar in the courtyard, and grabbing a hold of one of those bronze horns where they smear the blood during the sacrificial services. It seems to be an appeal for mercy, an appeal for forgiveness, an appeal for amnesty. And this time it doesn't work. When it was told King Solomon, Joab had fled to the tent of He Who Is, and behold, he was beside the altar. Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, "Go, strike him down." So Solomon dispatches the head of the military, "Go execute him." He crossed the line. Benaiah came to the tent of He Who Is and said to him, so Benaiah comes to, again, this is the ancient tabernacle. It's set up at Gibeon, just a few miles northwest from Jerusalem. And instead of going automatically past the gate and up to the altar of sacrifice where where Joab is holding on to the horns of the altar, Benaiah stops and doesn't go in. He simply said, "The king commands, come out." So the king says, "It's time for you to face your choices, face your fate." And he says, "No, I will die here. So if I'm going to die anywhere, you'll have to kill me here next to the altar of sacrifice." Now, Benaiah doesn't want to do that. That would seem inappropriate. And so Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, "Thus said Joab, and thus he answered me." And the king replied to him, "Do as he said, strike him down and then bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause." So remember, he had killed a couple of different people in cold blood. And Solomon is aware of that. His father even said, you know, don't let him die a normal death if you can possibly find a way for him to bear responsibility for all of that. And so here is his chance. Solomon feels that Joab was involved in this most recent Adonijah thing. Verse 32, He Who Is will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with the sword two men more righteous and better than himself: Abner, the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel; Amasa, the son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. And actually, he also murdered Absalom. So he has a lot of guilt on his hands. So shall their blood come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But for David and his descendants and for his house and for his throne, there shall be peace from He Who Is forevermore. So Solomon's response is, fine. If he doesn't want to leave that special place of worship, execute him there, take his body out, bury it, let the priest cleanse the place, because he's not going to get away with it any longer. He has been a wicked, evil man. Verse 34, then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, went up struck him down, put him to death. And he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. And then the king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, over the army in place of Joab. And king put Zadok, the priest, in place of Abiathar. So we find out that as Solomon begins his reign, because this happens right at the very beginning, he establishes Benaiah as his army commander, even though Joab apparently started out in that role at the very beginning. And he puts Zadok as the high priest, rather than Abiathar continuing in the high priestly role. So he's closing up accounts here. Solomon is taking care of things. And so apparently he decides, well, I'm taking care of other things that my father said to take care of. I might as well take care of the Shimei thing. So the king sent and summoned Shimei. Remember, Shimei was from the tribe of Benjamin, apparently a relative of the late King Saul. When David was evacuating from Jerusalem with his people during the Absalom coup, Shimei cursed David, said he basically had it coming, that God was doing this to him. David wouldn't let anybody kill him at the moment because he was in a deep blue funk, I think, and believed maybe this was all from God. But when David comes back after the death of Absalom, back to the throne at Jerusalem, Shimei is there at the Jordan River crossing, and he is like bending over backwards to be nice to David and try to help him out and prove, I can be your supporter after all, since you're a powerful person. And David allowed him to kind of get away with that sort of duplicitous activity. Even swore in the name of He Who Is that he would not execute him. But you remember on his deathbed, David said, Solomon, this guy's a bad guy. I let him get away with it, and I shouldn't have. If you see opportunity, you give him the justice that he deserves. So King Solomon says to Shimei, you need to build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there. And do not go out from there to any place whatsoever. So he says, you are going to be under house arrest for the rest of your life. You have my permission to build a house in the city of Jerusalem. But once it's built, you will live there forever. You will not be allowed to leave Jerusalem. Verse 37, for on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, now that's the brook to the east of Jerusalem, and I'm guessing that his house was going to be on the east side, and so it's the closest crossing point that would say he was outside of Jerusalem. The reality is, the moment he left Jerusalem by any direction, wouldn't matter, he would bring God's judgment down on himself. So on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall die. So you're going to be under permanent house arrest, leave the city of Jerusalem. You're a dead man. Your blood shall be on your own head. And so Shimei said to the king, what you say is good. As my lord the king has said, so will your servant do. And so Shimei lived in Jerusalem many days. Now, as we do a study in a chronological fashion, sometimes we have a gap of time between events and other things happen, and I kind of zigzag back and forth. This is one of those times where the story, the rest of the story is so brief, I'm going to go ahead and just tell you the rest of it. It happened at the end of 3 years that two of Shimei's servants ran away to Achish, son of Maacah, the king of Gath. So 3 years later, two of his servants run away from home. And instead of just giving up on them or asking somebody else to go get them, he chases them down. When it was told Shimei, "Behold, your servants are in Gath," Shimei arose, saddled a donkey, went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. Shimei went and brought his servants from Gath. So he broke his parole. He broke his house arrest to just bring back two of his servants. When Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and returned, the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, "Did I not swear by he who is and solemnly warn you, saying, 'Know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any other place whatsoever, you shall die.' You said to me, 'What you say is good, I will obey.' Why then have you not kept your oath to he who is and the commandment with which I commanded you?" The king also said to Shimei, "You know in your own heart all the harm that you did to David, my father." So not only did you break your vow to God, not only did you break your promise to me, you know just how wicked a man you've been, how badly you treated my father. So he who is will bring back your harm on your own head. But King Solomon, he shall be blessed. The throne of David shall be established before he who is forever. So you're going to get what's coming to you, while our kingdom, the kingdom of David, the throne of David, is going to be blameless in this. You did it to yourself. And so the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada. He went out, struck him down, and he died. And so the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. And so the things that David left undone judiciously, the judicial things, Solomon completed within 3 years. The wicked men were dealt with. We'll go ahead and mark our place and come back with another story from Solomon's kingdom the next time we're into the Word.